Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name's Barbara P. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, June 3rd. We're reading from the Big Book and we are at page 23 on the first paragraph, starting with "These observations would be academic" and ending with "and refuse to talk." Today's readers are, I have Judy O. on the 12 Steps for you, Laurel B., the 12 Traditions. Readers of our text will be Craig F. Nancy P. is going to be reading A Vision for You, and then Tamara C. is backing up the team. We also have our newcomer greeter is Karen W. Okay, so we are at the OA preamble. Oh, let me give you reference numbers for yesterday. Reference numbers for yesterday, Sunday, special edition. Fantastic. The reference number is 21452. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We're self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I'll now ask Judy O. to read the 12 steps.
Hi, this is Judy O. from New Jersey, a recovered compulsive overeater. Here are the steps we took. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food. Our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you, GDL. Appreciate your service. For the 12 traditions, Laurel B., would you step up and read for us?
Hi, this is Laurel B., gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Wakanda, Illinois. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority. A loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience, our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Less problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain for every non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such at never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me do service.
Great, thanks, Laurel B. So here's how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. I'll be timing and let you know when we get there. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. Everyone is welcome. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. So today we'll resume our study of the Big Book on page 23, the very first paragraph, starting with these observations would be academic and ending with and refuse to talk. I'll ask Craig F. to get us started this morning.
Great, thanks. This is Craig F., recovered in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Good morning, everybody. These observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. If you ask him why he started on that last bender, the chances are he will offer you one of 100 alibis. Sometimes these excuses have certain plausibility, but none of them really make sense in the light of the havoc an alcoholic's drinking bout creates. They sound like the philosophy of the man who, having a headache, beats himself on the head with a hammer so that he can't feel the ache. If you draw this fallacious reasoning to the attention of the alcoholic, he will laugh it off or become irritated and refuse to talk. Thanks. All right. So these observations would be academic. And the observations they're talking about are the observations in the last paragraph where they're talking about the allergy, about how when an alcoholic takes the first drink, he is powerless over his ability to continue or his ability to stop drinking. The allergy. So it said it would be academic to talk about the allergy, to even think about it. You know, the doctor, in the doctor's opinion, said that all he had to recommend was complete abstinence, which was his lament, I think. He was lamenting the fact that all he could do was tell you, don't pick up the first drink. In other words, he could treat the allergy. That's easy to treat. You just don't trigger the allergy. But he was stuck at that point. He had nothing beyond that. What Bill brought to the table, what the program brought to the table after that was a spiritual solution. And the spiritual solution is for the rest of the problem. And so this is the line, one of those lines that probably people need to memorize. I know I do. It's on the one that says, therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic or the compulsive overeater lies in his centers in his mind rather than his body. So if that's the main problem, then that's the thing that I need to figure out how to get rid of, or I need to have gotten rid of. Figure it out isn't one of the steps. But if the main problem centers in his mind rather than his body, what are we going to do about it? We'll find that out later on. But anyway, the rest of this is about the idea that we take an illogical approach to this, that our thinking is twisted, because it says it's like hitting yourself on the head with a hammer to get rid of a headache, continuing to eat. But the other thing I want to say is it always amazes me when I talk to people that have had long-term abstinence or long-term sobriety and they relapse. And almost to a person, when I listen to those people, they say that the thing that amazes them most is that they were dead cold sober or dead cold abstinent when they took that first compulsive bite. And in other words, the allergy wasn't in play. And that's what this first part of this paragraph is talking about. The allergy, once the food's down, the allergy's not in play. But this problem that centers in our mind, this obsession or this blank spot that is in our mind, is what's in play. And I have no solution in my own mind over that. All I can do is follow the program and find the solution in the steps. And with that, I'll pass.
Great. Thanks so much, Craig, for kicking us off. Great start. So who would like to share? I'll go ahead and take a list of names, and then everybody will have 3 minutes. So who'd like to go next?
Katie G. from Boston.
All right, Katie G. And who was it? Was it Tina?
Tina S.
Lindsay P.
Yeah.
From New York.
Michelle G.
Connie
Yetta from Texas.
Michelle G.
Nancy. And there was somebody GT. Nancy.
Did you get Lindsay?
Sorry, I can barely hear you. It's very muffled. Say again. Who did you? Did you get?
Did you get Hannah Yetta?
Hi.
Okay.
Lindsay.
I do. Hannah Yetta. Lindsay. I got Lindsay and I got Tom S. All right. Let me tell you who I have, and then we'll take that list. Melissa, is that you, Melissa C? Let me tell you who I have, and then we're going to go to the next list. We'll get started, and then we'll go to the next list. We'll have time for more after this. So this is Katie G, Tina S, Michelle G, Hani Yetta, Nancy T. I'm not sure if I have your last name, that's the initial. Lindsay, Tom S. It could be somebody else S. Melissa C. That's who I have so far. Is there anyone I missed who is definitely on that first list? And then we'll get started. Okay, so let's start. And then, again, we'll have time for a few more after this. Katie G., you're going to kick us off. You'll be followed by Tina S. Everybody else, please mute.
Okay, good morning, Barbara. This is Katie G., recovered in Boston. Thanks for taking the meeting. Yeah, I mean, I love this idea of the excuses, right, as to why I started eating. And there are 100 alibis, like my boyfriend broke up with me, graduate school was really hard. But if there's anything in this world that can, quote unquote, make me eat, then everything in this world can make me eat. And the thing I find so empowering about this paragraph is that this is why I keep coming. the main problem of the disease centers in my mind. If I just had an allergy, I could do Weight Watchers, right? I could do whatever, sorry, I didn't mean to say a body program, but I could do whatever diet and I would be fine. But I have fallacious reasoning, false reasoning. Like, if something external happens to me, then I have to eat. If you yell at me, then I have to eat. Like, this is going to be different this time. When I go down and exercise bulimically, even though, you know, my history is that I get hurt and that I start lying, I can go back over and over again. You know, I lie to myself first, and then I lie to others. And the thing that I often say is that I need to do my step 10s. I know we're not there, but as a recovered person, I need to do my step 10s. Because if I don't, eating will be a step up from my thinking, right? My thinking will get so bad, the fallacious reasoning. I take everything personally. If somebody is, you know, having a bad day, I make it about me. I have self-centered fear. I assume my daughter having a tantrum is my fault, and everybody in the world is going to think I'm a failure. You know, I walk into a restaurant and I think everybody's looking at me. I remember the first time I got high, it was at a party, and I told all my friends that my brother's friends were hitting on me, like, and not that they wouldn't, you know, I'm all that in a bag of chips, but the thing is, I draw fallacious reasoning. And the good news is that the main problem will center in my mind. My allergy never changes, but I get to go to God, and God will change my mind from this selfish, self-centered woman to a God-centered woman. And the good news is I have step 10 and step 11 and step 12 to see that I'm wrong, I have fallacious reasoning, and to get back into connecting to God and to all of you. So I am so grateful that I get to live today and that there is a solution. And with that, I pass.
Thanks, Katie G. from Boston. Tina S., you are up.
Thanks so much,
you'll be
Barbara.
Followed by Michelle G. Sorry, let me just put that in.
That's
Michelle
okay.
G., stand by.
Okay. Tina S., recovered compulsive eater anorexic in Florida. Yeah, great shares. I'm grateful to be on the line. I'm in the right place for sure. You know, I love this. You know, these observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink. And, you know, I can just so relate to that because, and I share this all the time because it's just the truth for me. You know, diets were great for me until they weren't. You know, I could stay on the diet plan until I couldn't, you know, and it wasn't because I was it wasn't because of the allergy of the body that I was getting back into the food. You know, it was because the obsession of the mind. And then it talks about, you know, my main problem centers in my mind, you know. And you know, what I know, when I came in here, people tell me what I know is that I don't know, you know, so I have to be teachable. And that was hard for me because I thought I knew everything. You know, but I got here and there were people in the rooms that were staying abstinent. You know, they were relieved of the bondage of the food because they had a plan to follow, and they were relieved of the obsession of the mind because they were working the steps. You know, and that's not what I wanted to do. You know, I wanted to just come in here and get the diet and go, you know, just like I did with any other diet. But, you know, I'm so grateful that after so many years of this thing not working for me, that I came in and I got teachable. You know, and I sat down and I listened, and I got a sponsor who was transformed through the 12 steps, and I followed directions. You know, we got in the big book, we went line by line. You know, she shared her story. You know, I worked the steps, and you know, and I'm free today, and I'm so grateful because, you know, if I don't do this deal one day at a time, you know, I won't continue to be free. And that's why I'm here, and it's through working with others. It's through doing the deal myself, so that I can help somebody else and to be free. And with that, I'll pass. Really looking forward to some more shares. Thanks.
Thanks, Tina S. So Michelle G., you're up, followed by Hanietta.
Hi, good morning. This is Michelle G. from Massachusetts, compulsive overeater. And I love this. And thanks for your share, Craig, and for your lead this morning. I love this because, you know, as has been said, you know, once I've detoxed, like once the physical part is out of my body for a week or so, then what, right? Then I'm just, I don't know what to do. I mean, because it's always been my, you know, food has always been my solution. But as a bulimic, it was like there was no particular food. It was just, you know, it was just the act of binging and purging that would bring me relief. So this is telling me that it starts in my mind. So my mind is still active once the physical allergies are in my body, and I could get relief just from thinking about the binge that was going to happen. I mean, it would start, I mean, it was so clear. I could start planning it, and I could, you know, like, all right, I have this much time to get to the grocery store before this one gets home, or I could pick a fight with somebody so I knew I could be alone. And, I mean, that, like, it was so clear to me that it started in my mind. So, you know, this compulsive overeater didn't have a connection to any higher power. So what was I to do? I mean, I take the physical part out of my body. I don't have that instant gratification. That's gone. And then I'm left with this really sick mind and no God connection, no spirituality, no desire to have a connection to a higher power. So it was just years more of self-will, like, oh, I got this one, or, you know, self-knowledge, like if I just stay away from this or that, and that's been talked about too this morning. So it's just a powerful reminder of how powerful my mind is. And I'm reminded of in the 12 and 12 that the 11th step talks about using the power of our mind to focus on, to think about them like meditation. And, you know, I can use that powerful creative mind that I have instead of picturing, you know, my disease, like my diseased food, my alcoholic foods. I can use the power of my mind to recreate a quiet place that brings me peace, which is really hard to do at the beginning, but just with practice. And that's some stuff that I learned later on. So anyway, thanks for letting me share this morning, and I'll pass.
Oh, thanks, Michelle G. Janietta, you are up next, followed by Nancy.
Yes, good morning. My name is Janietta R. from Texas, and I am a compulsive overeater working on the steps. It says, I'm pretty sure it said that all the excuses we can use to want to eat something that's not on our food plan, or I want to eat something that's not on my food plan. And right now I'm in the hospital, and I have to have a very major spine surgery tomorrow. I'm a little bit concerned, but my trust and faith is in God, and that helps me a lot. It's still going to be very painful, and so it's kind of like almost afterwards is the scary part. But I'm in a place where I could get anything I would want to eat. You know, I could ask all the girls to go get me something from the refrigerator. I could have them bring it. They don't know that I don't eat that stuff. You know, I can't get out of bed, but I can certainly go. I can certainly find food, and so. It's just pretty amazing that my mind isn't even there. It's not even with those things. It's still so neutral that all I need to do is just eat my regular food as best I can while I'm in here. And my husband brings me food that I can eat. So anyway, I thank you for letting me share. And I do like phone calls. I am in the lift. And I don't take calls on Saturdays. So thank you again. Thanks for your service, everybody's service. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Janietta. And if you would, spell your name for us, just so everybody can find you on the list. Is it C-H-A-N-A?
Okay. C-H-A-N-A-Y-E-T-T-A. PTA, one word, R. I don't
okay.
think there's another
Thanks so much
yet
from Texas. Probably Texas. Not. So, okay. All right. Thanks so much.
Bye.
So, and just a reminder to everybody, we are on page 23, the first paragraph. These observations would be academic and with and refuse to talk. So page 23, first paragraph. Nancy, you are up and you'll be followed by Lindsay.
Hey, Barbara. Good morning. Good morning, my fellow visionaries. My name is Nancy C. I'm gratefully recovered this morning by God's grace in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And thanks, Craig, for the lead and everyone who has shared. This is an awesome paragraph. And I'm so grateful that my hammer is down today. You know, I remember reading this one of the first times that I read the big book. And just like the jaywalker, it's like it's a hammer. That's so ridiculous. It makes so much sense to me because everything had to be big. You know, you don't just take a little tap at a nail. I had to bang it through and make sure that everyone heard the bang because everything had to be a big alibi. You know, when we talk about alibis, I had an alibi for everything so that I could get back to that food, right? And it always had to be big. It couldn't just be that I wanted to eat something. It had to be an excuse. It had to be a lie. It had to be fallacious reasoning for everything. And I am so grateful that God has removed the hammer out of my hand today and just given me the gentle reminder that as long as I work the steps and as long as I do my step 10s and see where my fallacious reasoning is starting to sink in to try and get that mind mess up. I mean, my mind is not normal. It never will be normal. But by asking God to help me with that every day, I have the opportunity to live sober and to live free. I am grateful today that the fallacious reasoning I can catch and nip in the bud as long as I work these steps and stay in fit spiritual condition. But I am just one bite away from being back out. He said I'm one meal away from being abstinent. It's the same way from being not abstinent. So I have to keep coming and taking my medicine, and I have to keep coming and listening to what everyone else has to say to make sure that I keep the hammer down today and that I just work with others to help them keep theirs down as well. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Nancy C. Lindsay, you are up, followed by, I took down Tom F., I'm not sure, but I think that's who it is. So, Lindsay, you're up, followed by Tom.
Hi, all. Lindsay P. from New York. I'm so grateful to be here. This paragraph, it just reminded me how important meetings are. I'm always so focused on this is a spiritual program, and of course it is, and the 12 steps are, of course, paramount. But if I'm relying on my own mind and I'm relying on my own memory and I'm not in the rooms to hear other people who are powerless over their food, then I am in the mainstream with the people who can have a bite of this and a bite of that, and I then want to be normal, or I think I can be like them. This is a disease where I can do it in front of everyone. You know, it's not like a drug where I'm hiding in the corner or going in a back alley. I actually stand out more being abstinent than I did when I was in the food, because when I was in the food, I just looked like I was ordering like everyone else, and I was doing much of my binging in private. So, you know, for me to go navigate through life and see everyone else picking up or having a little sugar-free sweetener in their coffee or saying I'm going to splurge today or it's my birthday, I can very, very quickly forget despite working this program every single day. And so that's why these rooms are so important to remind me that I cannot take that first bite, and that first bite will set this terrible cycle in motion. If I don't stay in the rooms and hear this message, if I told other people what, you know, one bite can do to me, they would look at me like I had three heads. So I am the person who has a headache and beats themselves on the head with the hammer, because I used to be in so much physical pain, yet I kept taking bite after bite, which was causing that pain. I was literally, well, not literally, I was figuratively digging my grave with a fork and a spoon. And because of everyone here in this meeting, I remember that that first bite is truly lethal to me. And this program's progressive, whether I'm working it or not. So I just needed this reminder that the rooms are so important and meetings are so important. And I just wanted to share that. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Lindsay T. from New York. So Tom S., followed by Melissa C. I know there was a gentleman on the list, so it is you, whether your name is Tom or not. I knew I didn't quite catch that right. All right. Going once, going twice. I'll check once more, or we'll be taking another list. Melissa C., then, you are up.
Hey, good morning. It's really, really good to hear you, Barbara. It's Melissa C., recovered a compulsive overeater in New York. And, you know, I have a mind that gives my body false signals about food and even actually hunger. I have to say, like, I have had experiences where I have just eaten my weighed and measured food. And then something happens. I remember like a few years ago, I got a call that a dear cousin had passed. And I was actually at a retreat, had weighed and measured my breakfast. And I got this call and I knew I had to leave immediately, right? And if I'm telling you, like, I got in the car and my stomach started growling as though I was starving. And that, you know, that is like, I don't know if alcoholics, you know, people who use alcohol get thirsty. I don't know if that's what it is, but I can tell you that my stomach actually growls when something disturbs me. And yet physically, you know, I don't need the food, you know, and other times it's just a discomfort, you know, it's just a little discomfort. And I've got a mind that says, not go pick up the cupcake, but says, like, it's just carrots, you know, it's just blank, whatever it is, you know. And for myself, that's the door. That's like opening up the door to this disease, because it's not, you know, my allergy of the body is not just, this is not sugar and flour anonymous, although those are, you know, dangerous foods for me. But it's compulsive eating. And so for myself, I had to really come to this huge understanding that impulsive eating for me is compulsive. It leads to compulsive eating. It's eating that, you know, food that my body does not require. And I remember when I first came to Overeaters Anonymous, I had said to a sponsor, this is like brainwashing a little bit. And she laughed and she said, well, maybe your brain is a little dirty. Maybe your brain needs a good washing. And that, you know, and we laughed about it. And I think about it and it's like, that actually kind of makes sense, because this is a spiritual program where we have a spiritual awakening to do what? To give us a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from compulsive eating. So if I just follow a food plan, if I'm just clear about my allergic foods, but I never do anything to treat my personality, to treat my mind, to have a spiritual awakening, I will succumb to the bite again. And I have had that experience. I mean, I've been abstinent and recovered over 10 years now. But prior to that, you know, I would have said I was a chronic relapser. And I think what it was is that I was not all in about needing my mind to be changed. And thankful today that it's not the case with me. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Melissa C. from New York. Appreciate you. Okay, so we are ready to take another list of names. Let me just repeat. We're on page 23, first paragraph, starting with these observations would be academic. So who else would like to share? Probably time for at least five or six.
Larry K.
Okay, Larry, gotcha.
Francis D. from Michigan.
Francis D. Claire, gotcha. Who else?
Kathy,
such a juicy, meaty. Kathy, gotcha. I was going to say juicy, meaty paragraph. Let's go. Who else? All right, let's go with those four, and then we'll see what time we have. Larry K., you are up, followed by Francis D. And Claire E., Kathy S., stand by. Larry, you're up.
All right, good morning. Thanks so much. I'm Larry K. I'm a recovered compulsive reader from Chicago. So it says, therefore, the main problem centers in the mind rather than the body. Let me consider something that where the problem centers in the body rather than the mind. I need to sometimes take a look at the alternative. If you've had a kidney stone, I don't know, I have not had one, but I understand it's pretty painful. Your main problem centers in your body. It doesn't center in your mind. The treatment is to remove the kidney stone. and until that kidney stone gets removed, your problem still exists. It's still there. The main problem centers in your body. Now, are you impacted mentally? Of course you are. If I can't go to the bathroom, I'm impacted. I'm uncomfortable. It affects my mental state, no question. But the main problem centers in my body rather than my mind. And here, conversely, we're saying, you're telling me the main problem centers in my mind rather than my body. So, conversely, no diet, no physical remedy, no exercise plan, no surgical procedure, prescription, potion, pill, anything is going to treat the main problem. It's like if you had a broken heart. Have you ever had a broken heart? I've had. Are we going to treat that with a Band-Aid? Now, a Band-Aid, you give me a nice SpongeBob Band-Aid, it might make me feel a little better mentally. You know, I might chuckle a little bit, but it's not going to solve my problem. I have a broken heart. I need some healing. I need some emotional, mental healing, and it's going to take time. And I'm not comparing this disease to a broken heart, but let's recognize that what the steps do is they treat the main problem, the mental problem. We're brought into alignment with a higher power, and the steps eradicate the obsession. It takes away the mental problem as long as we stay in fit spiritual condition. We access power. So for here, for this particular thing, you know, if I don't understand the problem, you know, I might as well try juggling, flaming torches blindfolded. You know, it's going to have about the same success rate. But if I do understand the problem, then I'm going to take action after action after action prescribed in this text to arrive at a solution in which the problem will be solved. That's an extraordinary thing to happen. With that, I pass. Thanks.
Barbara, press star one.
I'm sorry about that. Larry K., thanks so much.
This is
Francis D. Yeah, Francis D., you're up. You'll be followed by Claire E. Hi, Francis.
Good morning. Thank you for your service. I'm grateful to be reminded that the main problem is in our minds and to continue to surrender to clear that out. I'm grateful for all the sheriffs today and am really thankful for being on this line today. And with that, I pass.
Thanks so much for your share, Francis D. Claire E., you're up next, and then followed by Kathy S., and then we should have time for a few more people.
Thank you, Barbara. Sorry, I caught me a bit unawares. My name's Claire E. I'm a recovered bulimic and compulsive eater in Cornwall in the UK. Thank you for everybody that's doing surgery. Thank you. Sorry, my body at work. Service. I wasn't going to share today. I might hear by my panting that I'm fighting into work. And really moved to there just by this paragraph. It just is such a strong, as you said, meaty paragraph. It just describes everything that's wrong with me, really. And it really reminds me, and what really came up to me as it was being talked about, was the paragraph in the doctor's opinion where it describes what I suffer from, you know. And I have a mind, I know this today, I have a mind that just wants an effect of ease and comfort. And my mind knows that for me, because of my physical allergy, food does for me something it does not do for a normal person. So at a very primeval level, my brain knows food will fix me. Although it says I don't know the truth from the false, and actually that's a complete lie. The truth doesn't fix me. It is hitting myself over the head with a hammer and a headache. But my mind still thinks and has that delusion that food will be the solution to my problem. And my problem is that, untreated, left to my own device, you know, my perception, my disease of self, my resentment, my self-centeredness, my I will get, it's a promise of the disease, I will get irritable, restless, and discontent, angry, wanting to run away, wanting the world just to go away and leave me alone, and unhappy, depressed, self-piteous. And then, of course, my mind will look to food for ease and comfort, and in that first bite goes, and once that's gone, we're off to the races, I can't stop myself. And so the main problem centres in my mind, you know, that mechanism by which things get on top of me and I want ease and comfort. And of course, my mind can't fix my mind. You know, I cannot solve a problem at the level of consciousness at which it's created. So as it says in that doctor's opinion, you know, the only solution is a psychic change. You know, otherwise this cycle is repeated over and over. And that is my experience. You know, numerous relapses of exactly that, justifying, you know, making excuses, it's just a little bit of this, it's just a little bit of that. It's very cunning, back and powerful. I relate to what you just said about, you know, my illness doesn't come as let's eat some chocolate. My illness comes as it's just a carrot, it's just a this, it's just a that. I've got an extra carb today, maybe I should have this. So, you know, it is, and I have no defense against that. It speaks to me in my own voice, and I believe it. And I will leave it there. Thank you so much. Good to hear everybody.
Thanks so much, Claire E. Kathy S., you're up, and then we'll have time for a few more people.
Thank you, Barbara. This is Kathy S., recovered compulsive overeater in Georgia. And that question, why he started, if you ask him why he started, it just reminded me of this past weekend. I was out at a really nice restaurant with my husband and my two adult children. It was so nice to have us all together, and I was caught up, you know, just in the moment. The food looked amazing, and the bread and everything. And I got my salad, and I bring food to add to my salad, and it's very good. It makes it into a huge salad, but you know, I'm looking at the plates, and this thought in my head just goes, man. Wasn't it fun when we could have fancy drinks? Like my son, who's 22, he's like, what's that? I think I'm curious. I'm going to get that. And I'm like, isn't that interesting? And I'm like, wouldn't it be fun just to do that? You know, and I was fun back then, wasn't I? I even made that comment. And then it was, I mean, that's the insanity of this disease is that despite, you know, I forget about the havoc. That had I taken one sip or one bite of any of that stuff, I wouldn't be here today. I can tell you, I can promise you that I would not be at this meeting. And that's just, I've been entirely abstinent for 4 years now. And yet these thoughts will still come in my mind. But the beautiful thing is that because of, you know, staying in touch with this fellowship and working the steps, giving away 10 steps, even about having those thoughts and about program and how it's not fair, you know, I will still work it through. And I come back to God with gratitude. And I'm like, I need to get, back in the swing of things and back into being of service and sponsoring and doing all the things that I know I need to do that keep me sane. Because thank God that I had that second thought that was like, that's not going to end well, and you know it. And we left dinner, and I felt great. I felt good. We went out to a whole other area in downtown Alpharetta and just participated in a festival. And I just had fun just hanging out, you know, without the drink. And then the best part was waking up the next morning, you know, without the self-loathing, without the bitter remorse, and worst of all, the craving that it would have ignited had I taken that one sip or bite. And, you know, but it reminds me of that philosophy that my parents, you know, because I wanted to participate with my family. And if everyone was jumping off a bridge, would you go do that too? And, you know, and it's so dangerous. But for us, taking that first bite is that same thing. It's jumping off a bridge. And with that, I'm going to pass. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you. Yes, from Georgia. All right, page 23, first paragraph, beginning with, oh gosh, I just lost it. These observations would be academic. Who else? We probably have time for three more.
Bonnie B.
Natalie. Okay, I heard Bonnie. Natalie.
Tony B.
Tony, I heard it, but who was that last person?
Tony B.
Tony, gotcha. Tony B.
Yeah.
Okay, here's who I heard, I think. Bonnie, Natalie B. Bonnie, you are up, unless I heard wrong.
No, perfect. Thank you so much. Thanks for your moderating this morning, Bonnie B. from Florida. Thanks for all the beautiful shares, too. Gratefully recovered today by the grace of God for the next 20 seconds. Coming into this program was mind-blowing to me because I really, really, really believed this was a body issue. And I think because the disease started in a different spot than it ended up, and some of those Way and Pays worked, well, actually a lot of them worked, right? Or they appeared to work. I just couldn't figure it out. It was always evasive to me. It was so elusive to me how it could work at one point and then not work. And so my brain just kept looking for the next solution. And coming into this program and understanding for the first time, it gets to a certain point and it's not about the food anymore. Well, it's actually never really about the food, but that's how it presents itself on the front end. It's in my head. And I, like many of you, you know, without the 10th step, without being able to, like, get my head back on straight, because that's what it is to me. I go to places that aren't safe. I will be back in the food. It's not a matter of, like, if, it's when. I will be back in the food because the food is always, always, always a step up. And I think, you know, I go to that last paragraph where it talks about, you know, people saying, or the last couple of sentences, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? There was such pain. I'd wake up in the morning and my husband would say, where are the bananas? I'd say, I ate them. He's like, all of them? And there was such shame. It's like, yes. All of them, but why? And I don't know why. I just know that I would wake up in the middle of the night and I would be just absolutely a crazy person in my head. And my disease would even tell me at a certain stage, fruit's not a problem. And fruit may not be a problem for some people. And for me, it just happened to be a problem. And how did I know that? Because 3 ounces was never enough. We've got this thing on the inside. I've got this thing on the inside. There was such confusion. I could not understand how my brain could take me back to something that really was death over and over and over and over. And it was a physical death, but more importantly, a spiritual death. I was held captive in my brain over this thing. I didn't have a life outside of, what did I do last night? How am I going to replace it? How do I lie? How do I get around it? Oh my goodness, what's the scale going to say again? And then off we go to the races. It is in my head. It has always been in my head. It just presented itself in my body. If my brain is emotionally sober, the rest of me tends to be pretty good. So the 10th step is absolutely, paramount for me, and that just brings me back to my Creator. So thanks so much for allowing me to share, and blessings to you all. Have a great day.
Thanks, Bonnie B. from Florida. Natalie, you are up.
Natalie, star one.
Oh, good morning. This is Natalie M. from Texas, compulsive overeater. And on the subject of hundreds of alibis, before meeting my sponsor and putting down the screws just last week, I had hundreds of excuses and alibis for why I'm going to the grocery store every day, buying binge food, why food was disappearing from the house. But since putting down the food and now having these withdrawal symptoms, this voice inside of me has hundreds of alibis just trying to derail me, just telling me, oh, look how bad you feel. You should go and eat this. You know, you should have some carbs or some flour, some sugar to pick you up. There are like so many excuses from this voice inside of me. So, it's interesting to observe my thoughts in my mind and compare to just a few days ago before I put down the substances. To now, it's very interesting to just observe that, and I wanted to share my experience with it, and thank you for listening.
Thanks so much, Natalie S. from Texas. Tony B., you're up for three.
Thank you very much, Barbara, for taking the meeting. My name's Tony B. I'm gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Scotland. And wow, what a paragraph, you know. I wondered, do I really know I have an allergy? Because, you'd think in that case, if I really know that, surely that I can just take the action and not eat anymore. If I don't believe I have an allergy, what is it that I think I'll be okay this time, that I truly believe I can handle it this time? You could ask me, why did I start again? I forgot I don't really have this allergy. That's not going to rub. I'd only need to do a little bit of thinking, just take a little bit of time in contemplation. The alibis, though, I felt so bad, as though my life wasn't worth living. So why on earth not? That's strong with me. It could be any of these that could take me back to the drink. It could be as simple as I'll handle it this time, or it could be as awful as I'm about to kill myself, so I'm just going to eat instead. It doesn't really matter because the fact is I need to treat my head and I cannot afford to let up on the spiritual program of action, which treats my head. Because I am mentally different, I need a total psychic change. I need a soul change. I need to think of others more than I think of myself. I need to get out of selfishness. I need to be a part of, stop isolating. And I need to trust God. I need to trust that he can restore me to sanity, because I am indeed insane, if I believe any of those things. It's insane, because life is worth living, and because I really do have an allergy, and I'm not going to handle it next time, So I'll leave it there. Thank you for letting me share.
Well, thanks so much, Tony B. And would anybody else like to take? We have just 1 minute left on the clock. Anybody else like that minute?
Nicole?
I'm sorry, who was that?
Nicole J. in Virginia.
Yeah, Nicole, go ahead. You've got a minute.
Okay, yeah, I sort of the reason I love to take the last minute. I'm Nicole, just grateful to be here, grateful so much for these shares, and thinking how every time I hear these meetings, it just helps me relate and identify in, because in my disease, I identify out. I just don't want to be here. But I read this paragraph, and I know that I'm just like all of you. I have that obsession. I have that the mental twist. I have that physical allergy. I wanted to deny it my whole life. But if that were the end of it, I would really be in trouble if all of that admission was it. But the reality is that that admission gets me on to the next step, which is about understanding that there is somebody who can fix this for me, who can change my life and change me, and it will resound out to my food. So I'm grateful for that, and I'm just grateful to be here and hearing the solution. Thanks for letting me share that, Pat.
Great. Thanks so much, Nicole. We needed to hear you too. So glad you checked in. Well, good. So we are at the thing. We're going to take a break for our newcomer greeter. I want to thank everyone who shared. And please join us for the second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. Our share ID for today is 21453 for today's 7 a.m. meeting. We'll now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And Nancy P., will you read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only through Keep You Until Then. Nancy,
you know,
star one. Oh, there you go, Nance, we can hear you.
Sorry, my phone told me I was unmuted and then you couldn't hear me. Sorry about that. You can hear me now, right?
Yeah, we got you. Yeah, I got you now.
Okay, good. Okay, sorry about that. Nancy P., recovered in West Newton, Massachusetts. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.